All right, we're underway. This is Larry Johnson recording Countercurrents, and I felt the need to ask my old friend Bill Benny to show up, and we should have a little discussion now that we're coming up on it's been 11 years since Edward Snowden blew the whistle. But Bill and some others, Kirk Vivey and others in his crew were blowing the whistle before that. So, Bill, hey man, thanks for doing this.
It's good to be with you, dear Larry.
So if anybody, if you're looking for a good video summation of who Bill Benny is, there's a great documentary out, A Good American. And he is a good American in all aspects of what that phrase means. So, Bill, let's first start with you preceded Ed Snowden by about 10 years, correct? And trying to raise the warning about US government spying on Americans.
Yeah, I started in late October, early November 2001, because, I've been working the Russian problem, the Soviet Union, for so many years, and when I saw the NSA adopting the same principles of spying on their own citizens, I mean, to me, it was very, we're adopting totalitarian states, and that's what I a totalitarian state process. And that's what I said at the time was we're taking that very slippery slope into totalitarianism.
Right.
And that's basically what we've got now is a police state. I mean, that's fundamentally what's going on. They're making the rules in secret and doing anything they want to anybody they want.
Yeah,
I mean,
explain to people what it was like, what the whistleblower process was like, what you tried to do, because there's one of the unfair, unjust criticisms that Snowden is, oh, he didn't pursue all legal means possible. So I don't think most people
Well,
understand what you went through.
we did for 7 years, right? Until they raided us with the they sent the FBI and trumped up charges against us. I mean, we had the sworn affidavits submitted to the court to get the warrants to raid us, and they were lying about us. They concocted lies just to buffalo the judge that didn't know any better. And the
Now,
same is true with the FISA court. They don't know any better either.
yeah, explain who the US is.
It was Kirk Wiebe, Ed Loomis, myself, and Diane Rourke from the House Intelligence Committee. So the three of us from NSA and Diane from the Intelligence Committee were actually complaining about corruption, fraud, waste, and abuse to the Department of Defense because that's what the Inspector General there is supposed to do, and that's the right channel. That's the channel we used, and we went through the Intelligence Committee. That's the proper channel. And we also went to the tried to get to the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and that's also the right channel. Those are the things we did. And for that, in 2007, they concocted lies just to come back and abuse us and threaten us with the Intelligence Spy Act of 1917 for 35 years of imprisonment under that act.
And that's the same act they wanted to charge Julian Assange with, is correct?
Yes, that is. Yeah. And also Snowden. It has a death penalty with it, and that's why they wanted to do it that way.
So, tell folks specifically what you were alarmed about, after the 9/11 events, what you saw that the National Security Agency was doing. And really the intelligence community was now starting to do.
Well, you see, a lot of things I did against the Soviet Union were basically looking at metadata about data, who communicates with whom and how often, and the relationships transactionally over time to be able to assess what they're planning, what they're doing, what they're intending to do. And when you start doing the metadata, just the metadata part, you can really learn a heck of a lot about what militaries, organizations, people, what people are doing. I mean, that's what the commercial companies are doing now. They're profiling individuals, and basically what I was doing was profiling groups of people, governments, militaries, that kind of thing, not just individuals. And that was the big switch. I mean, when you do that to individuals, you're basically looking into their entire life. You can really, once you look at their metadata over time, all their relationships and every aspect of it, you can figure out a lot about them, what medical problems they're having, if they are, or whatever their likes or dislikes are, or, who they associate, what they might be intending to do, that kind of thing. All that can be deduced or inferred from metadata alone. And after all, it was Hayden who came online and I forget which media said, we kill people with metadata. That's how serious this is, just from the metadata.
Well, expand folks should understand that metadata is, for example, if I'm making phone calls every single day to a doctor's office, then you would record it would be able to pick up that I'm having contact with a medical facility.
Yes.
Or we actually, I think we just saw some metadata come out on the fellow who's accused of shooting Donald Trump.
About encrypted lines going to foreign countries. Yeah. That's a
Cryptid
serious issue. That is a serious issue.
line. Yeah, because and we need to I want to touch on well actually let's touch on that now. What does that mean for the average? Because I think the average person sitting out there may not understand what that means.
Well, imagine you're a 20-year-old and you're coming up and growing up in this country. When do you have a chance to have foreign contacts? When is it possible for you to do that kind of thing? Were you in the military? Maybe you have friends overseas, and that might be true. Did you take a trip overseas? Maybe you met some friends there and you're calling them. It depends on who he's calling, okay? And that's easy to determine too. Just from the metadata. A lot of
Right.
people don't understand. I mean, the if you make a phone call, any or any send an email, either way, it doesn't matter. Each of those things has signatures, so automated switching system can route it properly through the network worldwide to wherever it's supposed to go. So that means the two endpoints right from the beginning of the contact. That's how caller ID works and all that thing. All that works off that kind of information. Well, once you pick it up, you know where it's coming from and who it's going to, or in a building, or it's a mobile device, whichever. And if you do like our government does, buy all this information from companies, then you principally know basically whoever it is that's using that data.
Would the saying that it was an encrypted account, would that, for example, would that be saying, hey, I have a Telegram account with someone overseas or a WhatsApp or Signal? Would those
Or
fall
something.
under encrypted?
But I would like to point out that any commercially available encryption system is run through NIST for technical competence and
Right,
technical ability,
right.
right? And that when you read NIST, National Institute for Technology and Development, and so on, you also need to read NSA. So what that means is they get the algorithm. So then the only problem is getting the key. So then that's the problem of doing, that's why they have bulk attack, trillions of key tests per second, that kind of thing. That's the kind of thing you do. Or you look for different properties of it and different kinds of things to attack that crypt system. But you also have the other side of it, which is the company, and they can help you do that.
Right.
So, I just don't believe in anything if they anything is secure anywhere because of that and the fact that the companies will help and assist in doing that. And in many cases, they should have a warrant to do it, and that's then a proper way to do it.
Right, but we're now living the era of no privacy, basically, if you're online.
And also no warrants. They don't go for warrants anymore. There's no more a constitution. And it's not just metadata now. It's been content since 2002, early 2002. I mean, I could see that happening. I mean, if you look at the the upstream tap points that were exposed in the PRISM program, the one with AT&T has like 80 to 100 tap points inside the United States. Well, that's all inside the United States. But of the tap points that were listed along with them are 11 surfacing points for cable networks coming into the country from foreign lands, other continents. Well, if you're only after foreigners, that's the only place you need to tap. You don't need to tap the internal of the United States unless you want to target U.S. citizens. And that's exactly what they were doing from the beginning. And they call it under Executive Order 12333. This is why the courts, and they finagle out of the courts. Oh, we're obeying it under 702 or, any other any Patriot Act, all that stuff, sections 215. Well, they had a secret interpretation of 215 that says it allows them to get all the data, but we're only looking for terrorists there. So it's everything else is coincidental. Never mind, it's 99.999999% of the data, and most of it is U.S. to U.S. So it never mind that, and it gives by the way, the other point is that the data collected by NSA is directly accessed and interrogated by FBI and DEA and the IRS, by the way, as well as Homeland Security, and I don't know how many others now, but it goes through the Quantico facility, FBI going into the database directly, and there's no oversight of that whatsoever. And there's also no need for a warrant to do it. That's why I'm surprised that the FISA court only found 250,000 violations last year by the FBI. I mean, it should have been in the millions.
Well, if you think back to when Trump in the summer of 2015, now what I had heard from a friend of mine, a retired CIA officer who had been an SIS. That stands for Senior Intelligence Service. That he had heard from one of his friends that John Brennan had actually set up a, let's call it a presidential task force. And the task force was to collecting information on all of the presidential candidates in the summer of 2015, except for Hillary Clinton, because this was done to help Hillary. So they were collecting on Bernie Sanders, Marco Rubio, Cruz, and of course Donald Trump.
Well, remember that they wouldn't have to collect it. They already have it from the NSA database.
Exactly. Well, yeah. So,
That's the whole point. It wasn't collection, it was access and interrogation.
yeah. So it was maybe better, more accurately stated, analyzing what was out there or looking for needles in the haystack, which brings me to George Papadopoulos, because people. You know, they don't think through and realize, how did they know to target George Papadopoulos? And I said, and I've told people, I said, look, the when Papadopoulos is in the United Kingdom making a call back to the United States on a cell phone to Corey Lewandowski, Trump's campaign manager, boom, that lights up.
Oh, wait a minute. It lights up as a U.S. person to a U.S. person. His mobile phone is a U.S. phone. That's a U.S. number that's identifiable easily as a U.S. person.
But it lights up for the
Okay. Now you're okay. That's right. It does.
So the Brits light it up, and then they do what that little thing called liaison, where they pass it to their buddy sitting right next to them. Hey, you might want to look at this, mate.
Integrated people, yeah, right. That's right.
And then the next thing you know, there is this, I call it an elaborate plan, because I think it involved both CIA and MI6 in setting up this way to entrap Papadopoulos. Because all of a sudden, out of the blue, he gets offered this job as the vice president for energy. I mean, the kid's 29 years old. What does he know? Nothing. But boy, and I mean, he's in it's at a prestigious institute. And then he gets introduced to people who, by God, they just happen to have intelligence community contacts. Are you a big believer in coincidence?
Absolutely not. I'm a mathematician. I calculate the random probability of events happening, and that's a pretty low probability that it's randomly happening.
So that was just one aspect of how massive this effort was. Now,
Well, I mean, it even goes into getting and creating the Guccifer 2 files.
which is exactly where I was going next, because you and I collaborated on a couple of articles on that that were, I thought, important. So, and I imagine you had a smile on your face this week when CrowdStrike almost destroyed the world.
I said, well, okay, that level of competence is good for our government.
Okay, so go ahead and explain to folks what how CrowdStrike came on our radar, and what sort of bothered you and me about it is this
Well, when they
story.
were talking about they doing the investigation and saying they believe the Russians did the hack of the DNC.
Right, and that's they made that claim like this. It was May 2nd, April 30th, somewhere. I mean, it was really early. And then they didn't do a damn thing to shut down the network until June 10th.
That's right. And the downloads by the last modified times on the files posted by WikiLeaks for the DNC data all happened on the 23rd of May, the 25th of May, and the 26th of August. So it's well after they're there that these things are downloaded.
Right.
And then downloaded to a thumb drive or a CD-ROM, some of them, something, some memory stick. Okay, and then physically transported before WikiLeaks got it. That was the evidence I submitted in the court case for General Flynn and Roger Stone, and also Ed Butowski, in those cases. And the court would not let me testify. You mean they said that's not relevant, that it wasn't a Russian hack, that's not relevant, the guy lied to the FBI. That was their claim. But everything, it gets even worse than that, though, Larry, because the only evidence I really found out about Goosler 2, I mean, it was easy to prove the guy was a fake, okay? Because of the downloads, he posted stuff out there with the timestamps. And when he did that, it allowed you to do the transfer rates. And so when you figured out the transfer rates, they were well above. It went up as high as 49.1 megabytes per second. That's 49.1 million characters per second. Now that was not sustainable across any network anywhere in the World Wide Web. In a closed high capacity lines internally in a network, you could do that, but not externally.
So I'll say
The exceptions, of course, are the intelligence agencies that have very high fiber lines all over the world, and they can do those rates. Other than that, for the average Joe or the hacker, you've got to use the World Wide Web, and they don't allow, they won't sustain those rates. But at any rate, when you looked at it, he posted two files, one the 15th of July and one the 1st of September, I believe. And when you looked at the timestamps and all of that, the gaps or spaces in the files he posted where the time where there was nothing being passed during that time, between there were like nine holes there in time. And over here, there were nine little groups of things. And those timings, if you ignore the hours and the minutes, or the hours in the day, those files went just like that with no overlap to the millisecond. That meant the guy made one download and manually made a separation and moved it into another file and created a separate file and said he had two hacks, not one, when in fact it was just one. So the guy's playing with the data to begin with, right? And then we, with some of the guys we were working with in the UK, found five files that Goosefur 2.0 put out there that had Russian fingerprints in them, and they were the Podesta data. And those Podesta data files, when they were posted by WikiLeaks, didn't have those fingerprints. So it meant Goosefur 2 put the fingerprints in there. Then we paired it up with the Vault 7, release, where the guy talked about, this Marble framework program, which does, it makes it look like some other country's doing a hack, and the ones that it does is Russia, Iran, Arab countries, China, North Korea, and oh, by the way, it was used one time in 2016. Well, we think we found that with Goosefur 2.0. So the only evidence we have, not absolutely conclusively, but that Goosefur 2 was created by CIA. And that they were the ones involved in pushing it.
Now, because I think if as we look at the timing of this, so the last downloaded data at the DNC onto the thumb drive or other media was on the 26th, the Sunday. When that happened, whoever was monitoring, so and this time again, I blame it on the Brits, not the Americans. Even though the Americans were collecting it, the sort of warning comes from the Brits back to the Americans. So now again, you've got two intelligence agencies because they realized they discovered it when the information showed up in WikiLeaks, because both CIA, NSA, MI6, everybody and his brother were spying the hell out of them.
By the way, I should also point out that all the Five Eyes have access to the NSA database too.
Oh, good.
Direct, it's like a direct. They don't even go through Quantico. They go directly in.
Directly in, boy.
I mean, that's
So,
all documented too in the Snowden materials. A lot of people didn't understand that,
yeah.
but it's called through the IC Reach program. That's the one they use.
Yeah, and
That's
that's.
the program. The others have the X-Key score. That's the for the third parties and others who aren't in this selective group.
Yeah, ain't part of the club. Well, sometime within 24 hours, 24 to 48 hours of the discovery that Seth Rich was passing information to WikiLeaks, that this plan was hatched to create a Russian storyline. And that's where both the creation of Guccifer and then CrowdStrike started creating its backstory. But again, the one thing that just destroys CrowdStrike's credibility is if there really are a cybersecurity outfit, how in the name of God do you allow a Russian penetration to go untouched for 42 days?
And remember that when Sean Henry, the CIO of CrowdStrike, testified to the House Intelligence Committee. He said that he testified that they had evidence that the data was being prepared to be exfiltrated, but they never saw it exfiltrated. Well, if they're sitting there during that period of time for those downloads, they should have known. I mean,
Yeah.
for anybody who wanted to know who did it, all you'd have to do is go to the network log, look at the network log, and you'd say, who downloaded this,
Right. Yeah,
I
absolutely.
mean, they were probably checking what's transferring out of the network. Well, look at the damn log. That's the thing that tells you everything that's going on.
Well, you've also got that one piece of metadata was so clumsy, was in one of the headers. They inserted the name Felix Dzerzhinsky, who with Dzerzhinsky, for those who are not schooled in Russian history, he was the first head of the secret police, the NKVD, under Stalin, under Lenin. So, putting Felix Dzerzhinsky on that would be like, you're trying to create an email chain or evidence to claim that you're an American, and you put George Washington or
Yeah,
Benjamin Franklin in the header, right?
that's right. But also, I guess just think of it. What respectable spy would ever do that? Never. And by the way, there's another point here that nobody's really talked about yet. If you assume you have to assume that Seth Rich's murder, if it is connected, right, in whatever way. Then one needs to find out, well, how could anybody know if he was the one who did the downloads? And that happened in June, 15th of June, I think, was when it first started to break. And then he was murdered on the 10th of July, less than a month later. Now, think about all the leak files that have ever been investigated by even the FBI. How long did it take them to find out who did it? Sometimes years. Look at Deep Throat. They never found out until he was about to die. So, and he was the deputy director of the FBI. So, but who would know immediately who it was? NSA and their database. So when that happens, or NSA would be reporting because they're watching WikiLeaks all the time, that the data is passed to WikiLeaks or anybody associated with WikiLeaks, they're high priority. So they're covered all the time. Then they get reported. And when they get reported, it's under, they mask the name of the US citizen until there's a series check, is what it's called, meaning somebody comes in and requests an unmasking if they want to. Otherwise, they can go in and query the database directly and get the raw data. Right. But once they do the recording, they can focus CIA people to go directly in and find out the data. Those people could find out and notify the DNC immediately who did it. It's suggesting that they're culpable in a effort to murder somebody. That's what it does.
The death of Seth Rich, can we definitively, actually, I think we could definitively prove that he was the one involved with downloading those email messages and sending them overseas to WikiLeaks, never realizing the kind of risk he was putting himself in. But there are just too many problems, I guess, with the CrowdStrike story. And that they miraculously discover the Russians after the fact. One of the things I've always thought
Then
is,
testified opposite to that.
no, exactly. And
That's the
that's relevant. I'm going to come back to Sean Henry here in just a second, but just to point out that there are a lot of potential suspects because Imran Awan, who was a Pakistani intelligence officer or an asset, who was actually running the DNC servers. I think there's a possibility that Pakistani intelligence may have been extremely worried that their penetration had been compromised by this, and they may have had a motive to go after Seth Rich, because it was a month, it was in August that they actually started getting arrested, that this Pakistani network was, under attack, and yet the FBI was complicit. Those guys were FBI assets. I mean, so it just, the whole world is just dirty and tangled up.
I think Kirk Wiebe also found a Pakistani address on the I think it was the California Secretary of State's distribution network of email. And that meant But it went even beyond that, because anything that had him on it also got routed to them. And that included the entire all the states of the United States, because all these guys talked together. And so the entire election process was being exposed to the Pakistanis, according to that just having that, oh, I'm going to put my email in here so anybody that originates anything through this guy or to him, I also get a copy, you know?
Now the one other appearance of Sean Henry, then, with this latest outage, the CrowdStrike, the blue screen of death that went out. What do you think about, some have speculated that that occurred just after the assassination attempt on Donald Trump, and some have tried to argue that this was in fact FBI trying to erase data that might have even implicated potential involvement of the FBI with this kid Crooks. What do you make of that hypothesis?
Well, I don't know that I haven't seen any evidence to show that that's true, but that doesn't mean anything. I'm just waiting for evidence to surface to be able to say, one way or the other, what really went on there. Certainly, there's more to it than we've been told.
Yes, I
That's by
agree.
far true. That's absolutely true, because they're not coming up to just look at the testimony of the Secret Service head the other day in Congress. She couldn't say a word. Clearly, there were things that anybody with a half a brain looking at that site saying, why don't we have somebody on that roof over there?
That's
Anybody.
I yeah, it's either put someone on the roof or put a roving patrol at the base to make sure nobody can get on the roof, and then have it covered by a counter sniper team.
That's right.
A variety of things you could do, but none of them were done. That's the point.
And the other thing was that somebody flew a drone over the
The kid did. Crooks Crooks did.
And I was always trying to find out how he knew that, or how they knew that. They probably picked up the drone and it had the flight paths in it, left over from the previous flights.
Well,
But, I
yeah. So
mean,
the, this was not. They try to portray this kid as, he sort of woke up that morning angry at Donald Trump and decided to go out and try to kill him.
no.
because the explosives that were reportedly found, if that's true, you don't it's not amateur hour when you're building explosives. Yeah, I don't care that just because there is a cookbook online, not everybody can do it, or if everybody tries to do it, they wind up with nicknames like Lefty, One-Eyed Pete, One-Arm Mike, that kind of thing. They blow a part of their body off or blow themselves up. But he was clearly trying to, I think the plan was get the shots off, kill Trump, detonate the bomb, getting, attention focused on the bomb as a distraction so he could have made his escape. And then the overseas contacts, it's just all of these things start adding up and you go, this is not some 20-year-old who just, has overdosed on his, ADHD medicine, taking too much Ritalin.
I just thank God that Trump turned his head the right way at the right time, and this kid was either a bad shot or he didn't have his rifle sighted in.
No, actually, I wouldn't. I don't. You haven't seen I did a video the other day, so I took out. I'm a rifle instructor, and so I took a buddy of mine. We went out to a range, where I shoot, and we had 70 yards. So I cut the distance in half. This kid was shooting from 140, and I was using an AR platform. My rifle is much better than his, and. But I used a similar kind of optic. He was using what's called an EOTech, which is a red dot, and it can be red or green, but it's a dot, but it's not magnified. And we did sort of three variants just to see the difference. When I first started firing, though, it turned out I was 6 inches off the target, which meant I had, and the rifle had been zeroed.
Oh, okay. All right.
6 months before, 6 weeks
At
before,
what distance, though?
it was zeroed for up to 100. So I was shooting at
Slightly
70.
under that.
So I should have been right on. So we had to adjust the zero, and all that means is you're bringing you make changes in elevation and windage side to side, so that where you point the dot is where your bullet goes in theory. Then we shot of. Tried to do 5 shots in 3 seconds, then 5 shots unrestricted time just to see what you could do accuracy wise, and then as many shots in 5 seconds. Now on the 5 second one, I was finally once I had it zeroed. Yeah, I put 4 rounds in the silhouette of the head, but if I was at 140 yards. That spread was going to grow because, mathematics takes over. And, I'm a pretty good shot. So what this told me right away was, one, this kid had help. He had been out to a range. He had worked on zeroing the gun and zeroing it at probably at 200 yards. But because then you show up, how do you know where you're going to shoot from? Which means he was out
In the
there in
range finder,
advance. So, I mean, there is a whole lot of what I call sophisticated planning that went on in advance that, that was just not likely to come to him intuitively.
I pretty much think that's I mean, certainly, I mean, it was unfortunate that people got hurt there and one died. So I mean, it was just call that collateral damage. But I
Right.
mean, that's just despicable of the kid killing people randomly. I mean,
Well, there's a lot of theories saying there was a second shooter. I don't buy it, simply because if there was a second shooter, why didn't they just concentrate fire, number one, on Donald Trump? Number two, how did they coordinate their shooting? Because it's not like the kid had a radio on him that was able to communicate, or even a cell phone active saying, okay, countdown 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, boom, let's go. No evidence of that. And or the alternative could be, we just want to cause as many casualties as possible, so let's just randomly shoot people. They could have done that. They didn't do that either. So this was, I looked at this as this was a targeted hit. They had to kill Donald Trump, and That has now set off, I think, panic because their planning was still a little sloppy. And these tools that we've been talking about can be used against them as well, correct?
That's one of the things I was planning on doing is writing a little note to say, here's how you can figure out who all these people are, and it wouldn't be difficult to do. You just have to know how to do it, where to go, what to do, and
Well, it looks like Heritage Foundation's already on that now with tracking the metadata on the phones. I had.
But I'm going much further than that, though.
Yeah.
Anybody in the world that's involved in any way with any kind of criminal activity or any kind of governmental subversion or any kind of assassination attempts, that data can be pulled together. Even the data on the 2020 election, with the video on the Georgia ballot counting after they kicked everybody out,
Right,
and
right.
they did a re and shuffled ballots back in over and over again into the device. Even that, the guy was on his cell phone there. You could trace everybody he contacted, everybody they contacted. You could work out that entire network that was involved in that.
Yeah.
But you have to have the data, and guess who has the data?
Yeah. The,
Right?
the, the, no such no such agency.
And guess who has F access to it? The FBI. Do
Yeah.
they want to find out? No. Why? You have to answer that yourselves. I mean, for me,
Well,
it's because they were a part of
one of the things that most people don't
it.
realize with the investigation of Seth Rich, that the FBI Washington field office was involved. So first you've got to ask, why the hell is the Washington field office of the FBI involved? But then in the internal emails within the FBI, they were dealing with Peter Strzok, who is the head of counterintelligence. Why do you have FBI counterintelligence along with FBI agents from the field office involved what is ostensibly just a typical crime in the crime-ridden streets of Washington, D.C.? Does that add up?
No, it tells you why. I
Yeah.
mean, they're associated in some way.
Yeah. And it wasn't just that, oh, we got this report that this kid's been shot up in Northwest DC. They were on top of the Seth Rich information from the outset, which again, that tells you that there are dimensions to this that people just don't want to deal with.
Well, I think Cy Hirsch, that phone call that Cy Hirsch was, unknowingly recorded. He clearly said to his
Yeah.
source in the FBI, had that report and, it said what it said. And
You may not be aware of this, but I'm the one that introduced Ed Batowski to Cy Hirsch.
oh, yeah. Oh, okay. No, I'm not aware of that, Larry. No, sorry.
Yeah. I mean I you know Ed had come approached my company about some work and we were helping him on a different project and then he started talking about his experience with this whole Seth Rich case, which I at that point I hadn't followed that much. But then Cy, I've known Cy since, good Lord, 1981. So, we've over 43 years. And Cy mentioned he had had some conversation on this. I said, well, this Ed Batowski would like to talk to you. Well, I never in the world thought that Ed would record his phone call. But as you correctly note, Cy tried to back away from it, but I know what he said what he said.
Yeah, he did.
And it was Mick Mulroney, I think, Mick Milroy. He was a CIA officer. And
Well, if you look at what Comey and all the heads of the FBI have been doing, I mean, obviously they're involved.
yeah.
They're a part of it. They're covering up for people. I mean, it's just a dead giveaway. I mean, they look at what they did to us. They came at us with guns and stuff,
Yeah, so describe that experience for people to just understand what it is to be violated like that.
Well, I mean, I was in the shower when they came in at 9 o'clock in the morning, because I'd been retired, for 6 years or something like that at the time, and they rang the doorbell. My son answered the door, and they pushed him out at gunpoint. Then he came up and pointed guns at my wife, who was getting dressed, and then came into the shower and pointed guns at me. And I was sitting there saying, "Why the hell is this guy here? You know, I'm not, I mean, I know the guy's not going to shoot me because I don't have anything, you know." So
No place to hide a weapon.
it's obvious that I am not armed. Okay. So I tell him, I said, "Can I, you don't mind if I put some clothes on here?" He said, "Okay." So, so I got out and put clothes on. He put his gun away at that point. The point was, I was starting to get mad at these people at that point. I wasn't afraid of them. I knew why they were there. They didn't want us, because I'd listened to Gonzalez's testimony to the how the Senate Judiciary Committee the day before about the terrorist surveillance program, President's terrorist surveillance program,
You
and
mean
he,
Alberto Gonzalez, who was the
yeah, the
attorney
attorney
general at the
general,
time. Right.
yeah, he basically lied by omission. He didn't tell the whole truth about what the programs were. He only told the one part. "Oh, well, we're looking at, anybody calling in that's, like to a U.S. citizen, we tap that." That was already legal under FISA. The fast pursuit, we had that. It was legal. If you had a terrorist target calling in to somebody in the United States, you could follow them for 72 hours automatically because of that known threat on the other end to find out what's going on.
Right.
That's in the FISA law. And after the 72 hours, you have to get a warrant if you want to continue. So that was already legal. But that's what he testified to. And that was a bunch of junk, okay? He
Yeah.
wasn't talking about what it was is they in 2003, they threw Poindexter out there with the Total Awareness Program, TIA program, remember that one?
Yeah,
And
yeah,
everybody
yeah.
reacted to that. Well, they threw it out there as a way of testing the waters. How would people react to something they were already doing? And that was happening inside NSA. Because of that, they kept it under the weather, and they only told certain people, like the House and Senate Intelligence Committee chairs and vice chairs or ranking members. Those four people, they were the only ones to know about it in early November of 2001. I think the fourth it was. But after that, they told, I think in early 2002, they went to the FISA court senior judge, and I can't remember her name, but she got buffaloed into it too, because
Right.
everybody was afraid of 9/11 happening again. I mean, we were there arguing we should have stopped this. We had the way to do that. We had the programs available already running that were in the databases that you could have applied to the entire set of data being collected by NSA and found out and stopped this stuff. And made it much more efficient and made it possible, much more possible for the analysts to succeed at what they were intending to do, which is prevent things from happening, meaning intentions and capabilities are discovered before they're executed. Instead, they took this bulk acquisition approach that collect everything and then it dump it on the analysts and let them figure it out. Well, when you dump it on the analysts, they can't figure it out. It's just too much data. You can't
Right.
see the threat.
Right.
And so what happens then? Well, there's the there then the attack succeeds. So what do you know? Okay, forensically, you find out who did it because you get coverage of stuff. You can find out at least key people, and from there work out who their network is because you've got all the data in the world. And so, but that's a forensic job. That's a policing job. That's not an
Right, right,
intelligence
right.
job. I
Yeah.
mean, they've simply by doing it, they've destroyed their capacity to really succeed.
Yeah, trying to drink from the fire hose, you
Yeah,
know,
I
and
know.
then,
And more than
and
that, the ocean, basically.
yeah. So, because you developed a program that managed to make that data consumable or
Yes.
digestible.
Yeah, make the whole thing manual. It actually created a set of data that was rich in environment for the analysts to succeed at figuring out what their targets were going to do.
And that they've never implemented that, correct?
Yeah, they actually destroyed it.
Hmm.
The only part they kept were the parts that allowed them to do the mass data acquisition and the mass data organization or indexing and diagramming networks and relationships. That's the only thing they kept. That was the only data, that was the only programs, by the way, that they had available and still do, as far as I know, that actually would handle that massive amount of data. The way we design a mathematician, okay, so
Right.
the way it was designed was to take in any amount of data, didn't matter how much, trillions a second, it didn't matter. We would take all that data in, just keep piling it on. We'll take everything and we can sort it all out by, knowledge, using knowledge, deductive, inductive, and abductive logic against the knowledge that we were compiling, and filter it out right up front. That meant we would take in only relevant or highly potentially relevant target development type data,
Right.
and all the rest of the data of everybody in the world would simply go right by. And we wouldn't have to transport it. We wouldn't have to store it. We wouldn't have to be confused by getting it dumped on us to analyze. All of it
Yeah.
would be weeded out. And that's what they, well, first of all, there were two things. One, it didn't take a lot of money to do it. It was a cheap way to succeed. I mean, we only did $3.2 million to set up the entire program running 24 hours a day at three different sites for over a year, demonstrating it, and they
Yeah.
wanted 3.8 billion to start to do it commercially. Well, that's over 1,000 times as much, right? And then when they killed our program and tried to do it commercially, they failed. And so they were still only left with the data and the programs that we gave them, including the network or organization for a multi-party system and a multi-party network, and also the organization of indexing data and a distributed network through a distributed network worldwide.
Well, in fact, the
That
government
was by, and by the way, there's another thing here, Larry, that a lot of people don't, we I didn't know it for a while, but when we did that, we sent a test copy to our site in Bad Aibling that was later closed. And here we told them to say, take this software, try it out, see what you think, and give us some feedback on what you think we should change, just as a test. And they took it out there and said, this stuff works so well, we're going to put it on the whole site. So what happened was they did that late Friday night. They put it on the entire site at Badlands. That one site by Saturday morning was about to bring the entire database system down at NSA because it produced so much and their filtering process was so crappy, it just dumped everything in. And then by that time, it was about that we had to shut it off. They called us in to shut it off. So we went in to shut it off. And guess what? This was early, I think, early to mid-August. By mid-September, NSA and CIA went out to two guys in Stanford, I think, to develop a program to do exactly internally what we were doing. And that became Google. And they funded that. So the way we were doing it was the inspiration and the to for the NSA and the CIA to fund the development of Google.
There we go. Well, in fact, after you and Ed and Kirk were forced out, you'd retired, you were out,
Yeah.
you tried to commercialize what you had developed before, and the government wouldn't.
They wouldn't let us do it. They shut us down at every turn.
Yeah.
The FBI and the NSA and the CIA, they did that.
Yeah. So much for transparency.
Yeah.
I guess Thomas Drake also paid a price.
Oh yeah, he did. Yeah.
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 And then, so what do you, historically, when historians look back at this period, how important do you think what Snowden did relative to what you guys did?
Well, you see, the point is, I can't testify to Congress. They won't let me testify down there. And the reason is because they know what I did. They funded half the things I did, in fact, most of them. And so they knew that I was the developer of these programs, so that when I would come testify to them, they would no longer have plausible deniability. Right? So I can't testify in Congress. I mean, when I went to testify to the Bundestag in Germany, the intelligence community sent representatives over there to listen to my testimony. Well, if they wanted to hear it, I'm only 20 miles up the road, I
Right,
can
right.
easily come down. Why? They need plausible deniability. Because they, in effect, are permitting and advocating for violations of the Constitution of the United States.
Yeah,
So.
I no, I think that's the thing folks don't appreciate, that both, what you guys were doing, and I believe what Ed Snowden was doing,
Yeah.
was trying to say, hey, this is a fundamental violation of everything that our nation stands for.
Our founding principles, yeah.
Yeah.
And what the difference is, when I went out, they knew who I was and what I did. That's why they wouldn't let me talk, either in courts or in Congress. But when Snowden came out, he took data with him. And he took data that listed and laid out the programs that I developed. So when he did that, it's in the public domain.
Right.
I have the First Amendment right to talk about anything I want to in the public domain. So when Clapper came out and tried to say, no one, no current or former employees of the intelligence community is permitted to talk about anything Snowden's released, I told him, I don't give up my First Amendment right. That in the National Press Center down in D.C.,
Yeah.
National Press Club. I told him, and there were a bunch of ABC, NBC, they were all photographing this stuff. I said, I don't give up my First Amendment right to talk about anything in the private domain, Mr. Clapper. And I never heard from him since.
Yeah. Well, Clapper is a symptom of the disease that infects
Yeah.
Washington.
Well, he's fundamental. That's why this corrupt system works.
Well, if you had to identify the biggest villain, I know this is a subjective call, not necessarily driven by data, but Clapper, Hayden, or Brennan?
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
The enabler was Hayden. Hayden enabled it with the programs we did. He
Yeah.
enabled.
Yeah.
The other two were advocates politically. Tenet was the first one to say to tell Hayden, "Don't worry about the law. What can you do?" Right. So that opened the door. And Brennan was the guy behind the scene, I think, that organized all of the relationships and things, and the driver of that kind of thing internally in the US government. And then he was also the one, I believe, that was organizing the defense, the whole Russian scheme of defending it after the exposure of the DNC stuff. So he was kind of key to this.
Yeah, but
But I also don't let Obama off.
oh, well,
Because
yes, yeah.
if you look at all the things that were going against Trump, it was the State Department, the IRS, the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA, and where do all and how home intelligence home in home
Department of
security
Homeland Security, yeah,
homeland
DHS,
security,
yeah.
yeah, where do all those converge at what point? The president.
Yeah.
So who has to approve it? That's where I go. That's what I say is happening. That's my opinion of who approved the whole program.
Yeah, the gaslighting that's going on in America today, where the and again, I'm not a Trump advocate, I'm not signed up on the Donald Trump team.
I am.
But okay. All
I openly declare
right. I mean,
that.
I'm going to vote for Trump.
In fact, I will tell you this. He is the only political person seeking political office that I have ever given money to
Okay, that's
for
saying
60
something.
years. He's the
I
only one.
would have warned you off of that, not to not give Trump money, but just if you're going to do a donation, do not give them your real phone number,
No,
because
no,
you're going to be
no.
inundated with text messages trying to get money out of you from
Yeah.
everybody. They sell those lists,
No, I don't do
your privacy is a poof,
that.
but Trump represents a genuine threat to this corrupt, illegal system.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
And that's what has them scared to death. I think that's what why they were willing to back this assassination attempt.
Yeah, and if he really wants to know how to get these people and get them rather quickly, there are ways to do that. Right? There
Yeah.
are ways to do that using what they have done to the world.
Yeah,
They don't
this is,
understand that what they've done to the world, they've also done to themselves.
yeah, the turnabout is fair play in that sense. You know,
Exactly.
they've created these weapons. Well, we're coming up on an hour. What I want to, we'll I'll be back in touch with you as this investigation of crooks develops, because there's going to be some more metadata and implications out of there. And our old friends, again, I don't believe in coincidence. CrowdStrike, Sean Henry, FBI, CIA, NSA, the, you know,
Homeland Security, State Department, you know. I
now,
mean,
do you think Mike, the former head of NSA, Mike, Admiral Rogers, right? Michael Rogers, was it? Now, he did something that was pretty heroic and has gotten zero recognition for it. I don't know if he's gotten punishment, but he's the one that went and alerted Donald Trump that, hey, these guys are spying on you.
Well, let me put it to this way. He's also responsible for running the program. He didn't have to allow FBI, CIA, or anybody else access into that data,
But
even if he collected it.
didn't he come a point though where he shut it down because he realized, or he let it go on?
He never shut it down. It's too, you know, it's too big a program, too many access points from the Five Eyes, from even from the third parties that through XKeyscore, about nine of them are involved or something like that. I don't know how many is now, at least nine. And internally in the United States, there's just too much data being collected. It's just too much money, too much has been invested. You know, they're kind of tied to it now. But there are ways of fixing this, right? There are ways to fix it, but I don't think they, you would have to know the discipline. Professional approach to look at it deductively, inductively, abductively, to sort all this stuff out and get rid of anything that wasn't relevant. That would purge their entire data and they wouldn't be able to abuse anybody's rights.
Yeah, that's the irony we live with right now, that the politicians want to accuse Russia, China
Well, anybody else,
of being these authoritarian, totalitarian states that are violating the rights of everyone, when that's exactly what's taking place here in America.
It's projection.
Yeah, it is projection, psychological projection. All right, my friend, I appreciate you letting me take up some of your morning today. Or afternoon.
Well, it's good to be with you anyway, Larry. It's good to talk about these things openly anyway, to get some of the word out. You know, it's we're still in a mess because now look at what they're talking about doing, brain computer interface. My God, what a threat to that is. You're going to put your brain online and become another tool for anybody that wants to hack you. Remember, at brain computer interface is a two-way street.
I first saw the movie Terminator without Arnold Schwarzenegger. It was the first week of February of 1986. And the reason I remember that is I was at the CIA training facility in Virginia. We had just been taken hostage and subjected to a 2-day interrogation. It was their version of SEER school, survival, escape, resistance to interrogation. And we were then rescued, in this dramatic fashion from our hostage takers. And so, as part of our downtime after that, to eat and sort of recover, somebody brought a videotape of Terminator, the first version with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And so now here we are. That was 40, let's see, 49, 41 years ago or so. So we've lived, I've now lived long enough to see that become reality. You know, that's where this artificial intelligence with robots that can kill have it's actually, it's nothing that's part of science fiction. It's now part of reality. So
And the one thing I always, the one rule I always has, you never connect an automated system up to a weapon.
yeah, no,
Never.
good rule of thumb. Listen, you've I encourage people, if they have not had the chance to get a hold of the documentary, A Good American, because Bill Binney, you are a genuinely not only good American, but a courageous American and a true patriot. So I thank you for all the sacrifices you've made.
Oh, thanks, Larry.
All right. All right, my friend, I'm going to hit the, we'll stop recording.